Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
This whiskey got me feeling pretty, so pardon if I'm impolite.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for gathering here with us tonight as we nurse one of our writers back to health. John Troopin has come down with a case of the Cooperstown flu, but heroically, despite being 3 hours ahead of us time-wise and centuries behind us, health-wise, is going to power through and talk to us about what he saw in the Arizona Fall League. So, John Troopin, if you could uncover yourself with tissues or whatever coping mechanism.
I've got a lot of sort of Mennonite cloths that I'm and tinctures that I'm using to. It's kind of what we got here.
Do you have to go to the apothecary instead of like a Rite Aid?
There's mortar and pestle. They sort of ground up some leaves, feeling great, feeling vim and vigor. Excited to talk about Arizona, the place that I was in a week ago, and that I've been exclusively raining now. And I'm very envious of the sunshiny place that Kate and I spent a week. Well, Kate spent 2 weeks.
It is true.
Scouting and studying.
Learning. Getting my learn on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that learner is Kate Prusser. The sick man.
Do we have
is
a drum
John
roll?
Troopin.
Sorry.
Neighbors taking their trash cans out. Sorry, I tried to mute it, but I was not fast enough.
It is okay. We'll leave it in, baby. Kate's neighbors, come on the Lookout Landing podcast.
definitely don't do that.
Kate's neighbors, send me some Dayquil.
John and his rough spun cloak need something to get him back to feeling normal.
Okay. We were doing like old timey. You've gone into fantasy with the rough spun, but that's fine. We're drawing from all the different genres, I guess.
No. Well, that's kind of what Cooperstown is. It's that baseball magical place where everything is sort of on that line between real and fantasy. So that's me just being an expert podcaster, spinning all this together.
It's true.
Thank you, John. But I was going to say, we are not here to speculate on whether John is actually draped in burlap or just normal clothes. Kate and John graciously went to the Arizona Fall League to get a first-hand look at what the Mariners prospects are doing, and I guess also in turn the prospects that the Mariners prospects played against, who some of which are in our division with the Angels affiliates or whoever. So this is just going to be kind of a general Q&A. I'm going to be playing the role of, what's that guy's name on CNN who does the debates? Chuck Todd, is that him?
Oh, yeah.
I'll be him,
Wolf,
but...
Are you Wolf Blitzer. Give yourself a Wolf Blitzer.
Wolf has a different sort of energy. I mean, none of them really, I feel like, are true, like, muses for me, but for the sake of tonight...
You mean
I'll
this group of older white men are not your...
That's
you don't
not
feel
really
a soul
me.
Kinship with them?
No.
I just remember the one gif. There's like there's two women sort of debating something, and then they graphic in Wolf Blitzer just appearing in the middle and separating them both out. And I feel like that's your moment right here.
That's Manu he's part of baseball Manu. Twitter. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Shout out to Manu.
Shout out to baseball tweet. Twitter. But anyway, so you've been back now. The Arizona Fall League has finished. You have been back out of the dangers of Arizona in a regular human climate for some time now. And I'm curious, now that you've had some time to reflect, let the baseball sort of seep into you and get a full experience. The big question that I'm asking, and this is intentionally vague, would just be like, what is the Arizona Fall League? Like, for someone who's never really like looked into it, maybe they've heard about it, you know, through Twitter or through, you know, reading our stuff on the internet or whatever. But what is the actual mechanics of the Arizona Fall League? If you would be so kind as to explain that, either of you.
Kate, you've been there twice, so I was going to give you the first sort of go since you have a little more experience.
The way that the Arizona Fall League is described often is prospect graduate school. So it's sort of like a final polish for a lot. Originally it was intended, I think, to be a final polish against elite competition for a group of players who were potentially being eyed as call-ups for their club in the next year or two. Now they've expanded it so that you don't have to have completed or even played in AA at all to have been there. There were a ton of guys who were from high A. There were even the Rangers sent a bunch of guys from A ball, which I thought was kind of weird, although also a lot of them were older guys. Guys go to like make up time too. A few of the guys there were making up suspensions. Forrest Whitley was from the Astros, kind of the big name as far as that goes. He missed a bunch of time last year in 2018. He had a 50-game suspension for PEDs. Also guys who got hurt, Bubba Thompson, who is one of the Rangers' top prospects, he was there because he broke his hamate bone. So it's for a certain class of prospects, theoretically, although they also have to fill out their rosters, and generally the pitching is not kind of the strong point unless you have, like, a Forrest Whitley who needs to make up time. You'll see some really good offense. It's, I would say, about 80% guys who are going to play in the big leagues, and there's usually there are big names there. Like, Pete Alonso was a big one. Last year, Vladito was there. Acuna was there 2 years ago, so it's generally guys who will have some, not all of them that star superstar caliber, but it's guys who are going to have some role.
The nice thing about it is you are essentially getting an instant gratification in a way that the minor leagues don't usually deliver, in that you are getting to watch every single at bat is somebody who probably will be somebody. And whether it's, last year they had, Vladito, and the year before Acuna was there, and Pete Alonso was there last year. People who will fill out MLB rosters. It is essentially an opportunity for teams to both get a good off-season league that doesn't require them to have their players go play in foreign countries, and as a result, they get to provide a little bit more direct coaching, and they also it also is essentially the best opportunity for anyone who does scouting to see a condensed package of near major league talent. Any time of the season.
So are there rules to how many players one organization can send? Like, did the Mariners have, like, is there a cap on how many people you could send? Because doesn't it, like, it's that thing where, like, there's multiple, like, players from other organizations end up on the same team? So, like, the Peoria Javelinas wasn't just a team of all Mariners.
Right. So there are five teams per, or like five MLB teams per AFL team. There are six clubs. And so you, I believe there's like a minimum number, but essentially you'll have somewhere in like the 4 to 7 range, right, Kate?
That's, yeah, they have a draft, yeah, which I didn't know about until this year. So each club gets to kind of say, like, we want to send this guy, we want to send this guy. And then the rosters are filled out from there.
And there's a strange little bit of distinction because until very recently, as Kate alluded to, it's by and large players above or in AA or AAA. And there are actually limitations on how many players a major league team can send of players that are below AA that haven't reached AA yet. So any team can only send up to 2 players below AA, and I think even that many was a recent change. And there's also some degrees of regulation about how many players of foreign origin can be sent there, because the leagues, for example, in the Dominican and in Venezuela, there are sort of robust winter leagues, and Mexico, there are robust winter leagues that players will often go play in. And it's a big deal to have some of their bright young stars come play. And there are some sort of limitations on how many players MLB teams can just say, no, you can't go play in your home country. You have to come play at the AFL.
Okay, so now that we got the boring stuff out of the way,
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the surprise Saguaros, which had the Rangers, because I mentioned they had sent a bunch of not AA people.
Right.
And I'm looking at who they sent, and they did send 4 pitchers, and all of them were A or high A, not a single double A.
Huh. Well, I wonder if there was a very, either a recent rule change or if there's sort of changes on pitchers.
Actually, I don't think Texas sent anyone who was at the double A level, so that's a little bit,
lock them up.
That's a little bit different. Yeah, Texas really took advantage of that lightening of the rule about only being able to have so many players at some level. And I don't think there was a limit, since it does not appear that they sent anyone who was at AA. Although, like, one of the guys they sent who was high A is a pitcher, and he's like 25, I think. Which the Mariners had their own 25-year-old in high A who they sent, and we'll cover Ben Murphy later, but. Yeah, just to kind of drive home that point that the composition of the Arizona Fall League is maybe a little different than it's been in the past.
Got it. Okay, so before we get into the actual players, I was going to ask, because you brought up the Saguaros, I was going to ask for a quick power ranking of all the team names. Since it's only 6, I feel like you guys can talk amongst yourselves on air here. We'll work it out together and figure out which one is the best. The Mariners are the Javelinas, right? The ones at the Mariners.
Yes, the skunk pigs.
That's the logo is like a terrifying. I mean, the feral hog.
I have a hat.
Has been
it's
made.
Very good.
John has a hat. It's like a radioactive looking pig. It's like glowing. There's like a lime green element.
They introduced the lime green element this year, I'm not like a super huge fan of. Yeah. But
okay, so there's them. There's the Saguaros. Who else is down there?
We got the Glendale Desert Dogs.
Ooh, I do like that.
Who are like coyotes, basically. They have a cool logo, too. It's like a coyote howling.
Yeah, the trouble is the logos are all very good, pretty much. Well, maybe
I mean,
not.
Salt River, so there's Salt River Rafters, too, who play at Talking Stick, which is really cool. That is by far the best field in the AFL. It has kind of a almost pro field. Mm-hmm. And if you go for spring training, you can go to games there, too. The Diamondbacks and Rockies share it. But their logo is unfortunately looks like a swab of Crest toothpaste.
It's just like three little waves.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. There's the Mesa vibing. Solar socks, which are not particularly
That one
good.
Sucks, and they have yeah. like a really sucky, like frying sun. It's just, it's no good. I would put that one below the Salt River one. No.
Yeah, they're solar socks has to be last. That doesn't make any sense either. Like at least
yeah. What is a solar sock?
Yeah, I know what red is. I know what both of those words mean. I just don't know what they mean together.
Like, yeah.
Does
so,
the sock is it powered by the sun?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a
sunny D situation. All right. So I would say Mesa Solar Socks bottom, yeah. Salt River Rafters second from bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Scottsdale Scorpions. It's good. I think those two, the first two are like way low, and then everything else is good. It's just, you know, if we're having to rank them, Scottsdale Scorpions, like, it's good alliteration. It's, I don't know that their logo is super complicated, you know, complicated.
No,
but
it's just solid. I will say that having found a scorpion in the shower of my Airbnb one morning.
Oh, no, Randy.
I am going to come in strongly against scorpions. I would have rather found any of the various mascots in the shower. That's give me fair. A skunk pig, even. Give me a javelina.
I don't actually know about that one.
I know how to deal with a javelina. I did not know how to deal with whatever that business is at the end of a scorpion. That's terrifying. Right. That is an assault against God. I hate
it. Wow. Kate is alienating all of our scorpion listeners.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to issue a Notes app apology to all of the scorpions.
I think it honestly, it just goes kind of in order from there of, you know, like the desert dogs are good.
Desert dogs is cute.
Javelinas is really good.
I'm going to put javelinas below the desert dogs because I think the coyote, the logo is much cuter. The feral hogs thing kind of scares me.
That's fair. But I do think it sounds like we agree that the surprise saguaros is the best one.
Yeah, so they redid the logo this year, and now it used to just be like a cactus, whatever. But now it's an adorable anthropomorphized cactus.
Yes,
and
with a bandana and a cowboy
hat. It's so great. No, it's easily the best logo.
Yeah.
And I like how surprise can be an adjective there. Like, oh, it's an unexpected saguaro.
Yeah.
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Matthew, I've sort of dropped you a link there, and you can sort of see the logo versus the past logos there if you'd like.
This is great for an audio medium, but I will look at it. All right, I'm opening it now. Oh, wow. Oh, he looks gang-affiliated.
Well, that's kind of on you, I think, maybe. Maybe. It's windy.
It's just a bandana.
But the way that he looks very menacing.
His eyebrows are a little bit intense. I'll give you that.
It's as menacing as they could make, like, a cartoon cactus look. So
yes,
with the red and black lumberjack and the hat to match. All right. So now that that's out of the way, you were there to watch actual baseball. Of the Mariners, Rugrats, who were there, Julio and Jared were the big headliners, although Jared had some setbacks, I guess, with his mouth. Is that what it was, right? He had to get his wisdom teeth
pulled? No, he had back stiffness.
Okay. But so
he did have the wisdom teeth initially, but then he played in, like, I don't know, 3 games and then had the back stiffness, and then they shut him down, so...
Right. Okay. But I think the big surprise, and the ones that if people who weren't there were kind of following sort of casually, the big name that jumped out was our very own braided-haired son, Penn Murphy. What's going on with him?
Cornrowed son.
Cornrowed. Thank you. Yes. I couldn't get a good look at some of those pictures and figure out what exactly he was doing because the hat obviously obscures things.
We had the opportunity to meet Penn on a couple different occasions, and I will say he is, John, is style icon too heavy of a term to throw around with Penn Murphy?
Not at all. He's got a real Charlie Whitehurst vibe, and it's absolutely an impressive setup.
Yeah, Penn is from Nashville, Tennessee, but
like Charlie White? Well, maybe.
Well, where he eventually ended up, I guess. But he has really taken to his time in California and now in Arizona. He has a signature hat. He did not want to be photographed without the hat on because it's his signature. So, you know, he spent his off days going and playing guitar in the Red Rocks of Sedona.
Wait.
I would love it if they let him pitch in that hat, actually.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the hat. What kind of hat is this?
a Stetson?
It's not. I don't know that it's quite a it's like a smaller brimmed Stetson.
Is it more like formal wear or like Tommy Bahama vibe?
Oh no. It's a classy hat. It's like a felt hat.
What? Wow. All right.
Felt? I think felt. Maybe it's a very pale leather, but
so now I'm picturing the Pharrell hat. I don't think it's that.
No, it's not ridiculous. Its brim has like some turquoise and silver action.
Oh my god.
It looks like something that my grandfather, when he moved to Arizona in the early 2000s, would have really, really liked. In fact, it might actually be my grandfather's hat. Which, you know, he was a sharp dresser. That's nothing to take away, but it is a signature piece. The day we saw him, he was also wearing a pale pink shirt with skulls on it.
Wow.
Skull and floral print, and carrying a floral backpack that he had picked up in the California League when he was with Modesto as like part of their dress up days where they get like 15 minutes to go into a Goodwill and have to put together a look from that. That's kind of a common road trip bonding thing. So anyway, he just really liked this flowered backpack that he had found and has been carrying it around. White linen pants, kind of adding to the reclusive celebrity on a cruise look. It was a head to toe look. I will say that.
No, I love this, especially when we're just describing it and everyone else who's hearing this can only, like, listen. There's no visual element to this, so everyone, I think, is going to have a slightly different picture. I know what he looks like in the face, but this outfit you described feels very, like, Jason Mraz to me, and I feel like that's not the actual look that Penn is going for.
I mean, it is a similar, like, laid-back, kind of West Coast,
okay,
you know, chill vibe, good vibes only kind of setup.
Here's the thing. Basically, if Jason Mraz, instead of being kind of, like, I assume, like, sort of scrawny with, like, a goatee, was, like, 6'4", 6'5".
6'3". Like, Penn is 6'3".
Okay, 6'3", and, like, fairly built and like just every part of him was muscle and had like the firmest handshake you've ever encountered. That's sort of
it, like, was a firm handshake.
Yeah. That I think is, then you're getting the right, like, it just everything Jason Mraz wore, but like in an extra medium somehow.
I see. That's a perfect explanation.
Also, he was mildly annoyed that he had to go to the Fall League, which this was cute. He thought that when he had been assigned to the Fall League, that he had been assigned back to Instructs. And he was like, oh, man. He didn't realize that the Fall League is, like, prestigious or whatever. But he had set up a whole thing through his dad that he was going to go work on a ranch in, like, Wyoming or Montana or something. He had, like, a position all saved for himself where he was going to throw baseballs into a net in a barn at night and, like, by day, like, drive cattle and birth calves and stuff.
And then baseball got in the way, is what you're saying?
Yeah, and then he wound up being selected to this super prestigious league, and now he's actually playing for Team USA as they try to qualify for the Olympics, so... It's been quite the glow up for Penn Murphy over the last few months.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like he's not one of the more well known Mariner prospects at all. Like,
if you try to call him a prospect, he will correct you. I said that, and he was like, "Technically not a prospect." So
wow, we stan a humble king.
We do stan a humble king.
So Penn, can you refresh me? He was in Double A last year.
Single A.
Single A.
High A, yeah.
So the Modesto Nuts.
Yes, he was part of the motley crew of Modesto, which, you know, really was, like, the highest drafted guy that they had, I think, was Joey Gerber, the reliever, who was an eighth rounder. And then, you know, they had Logan Gilbert for a little while, but everyone else, like, Ian McKinney was a cast-off from the Cardinals. who am I trying to think of and I'm forgetting? Austin Hutchison was a free agent, maybe? Ray Kerr was a free agent. No one in that bullpen had been drafted other than Gerber ahead of, like, the 20th round. Penn, I think, was a 33rd rounder.
He sure was. I'm looking at it now. A 25-year-old, 33rd round pick who, he did get 5 games in AAA, it looks like, in 2019. Am I reading that right?
You are. We were actually at opening day with the Rainiers, Kate and I, sitting and watching sort of later in the game as a sort of sidearm reliever came in. We were like, Penn Murphy? We're not super impressed.
Full name, William Penn Murphy.
Yeah.
Is he a Quaker?
No. Disappointingly, there's not an awesome story behind the name other than his dad is also Bill, and they didn't want to call him Bill, so they called him by his middle name, Penn.
Got it.
But yeah, a very solid transition. He was just in AAA, basically, as like a fill-in arm initially. Yeah. But yeah.
So what can you tell us about Penn, the pitcher? What did his stuff look like down in Peoria or wherever the hell you were in Arizona? Surprise, Peoria, whatever.
It is all basically just North Phoenix.
Yeah.
North and Norther Phoenix. It was pretty solid. It's not overpowering. He's got a bit of a funky sidearm delivery, but he's throwing fastballs and sinkers. It's 91-92. He's got a really good slider that is usually like an 82-84 range, and he really just befuddled a lot of hitters who had a lot of who were very well thought of this entire fall. And the AFL is not a good place to be a pitcher. It's just because it's constantly the best prospects at any position in Arizona, where the air is thin and it's 88 to 90 degrees every game and clear in spring training ballparks. But it was legitimately impressive.
He's got a changeup, too, that he's working on taking some velocity off on. And we talked to him for a while, and we will have, like, a full-scale interview up with him on the site relatively soon, but...
But the changeup, I think the issue essentially was it with that lack of velocity separation, it's not yet enough to really challenge left-handed hitters. And when you are a sort of funky right-handed pitcher... or sidearm pitcher in particular, the issue is almost always going to be, and this is true of really any sidearm kind of pitcher, is it's way easier for an opposite-handed hitter to see the ball coming out just as much as you are making it harder by reaching further out on a same-handed hitter. And so you have to have a really good pitch that'll break away from those opposite-handed hitters. And he's still working on that, and that typically will be the difference between is this person a reliever who can go for, an inning with significant success as long as they're used against the right types of hitters, or is this someone, a starter, who you can leave in, or even just like a reliever who you can give multiple innings to.
Right. I mean, it's encouraging that he continued to go out there, continued to be able to work 4 or 5 innings at a time against difficult competition, against some very good hitters, and continued, there wasn't any drop-off as they saw him more. His numbers were pretty much consistent. I actually even think he got a little bit better as the fall league wore on. I mean, there was a day where he struck out 8 batters in like 3 innings. Was that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. This is the time we saw him right before I left, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fab.
So he won some award too, right? Or was getting a lot of hype from the writers who were down there. They gave him some sort of prestige, it seems like. Like he was one of the breakout guys or whatever.
Yeah, he got pitcher of the week, and a championship chain, which was like this enormous, literally enormous metal necklace, the gold chain situation, had his name on it and everything. He was justifiably proud of it. Like, he definitely wore it in the dugout for a few innings after he was presented with it.
It looks like no joke, looks like a spot-on replica of the turnover chain from the University of Miami football team, if that is a reference that lands for anyone, which I think, now that I'm thinking of it, won't be either of you, but maybe some of our listeners.
No, I've seen the chain.
Okay. I mean, it's that, but just that's like a plate that says Arizona Fall League Pitcher of the Week instead. It is gigantic.
I love that.
Yeah, it's very good, and a great way, because I mean, all these guys are, you know, 23 or younger by and large. Obviously Penn's like a little older, but like, even still, like, you want stuff that gets these guys hyped to be in Peoria, Arizona, instead of relaxing at home.
That was off-season. I mean, there were definitely, I saw like Luis Garcia, who is the top prospect for the Nationals, one of the top prospects for the Nationals, very young, like 18. And he was a little, I saw him towards the end with the people who were in my scouting camp, mini camp thing. And, he looked pretty rough. Like, he was not bringing his best effort. I would say the same thing about Omar Estevez, who's the, one of the Dodgers' top prospects. I think he's in their top 20, a shortstop. He was horrible when I saw him. and I mean, I have like a history with him. I've seen him be a dangerous hitter against our AA team, but, you know, I was listening to the kind of conversation about him, and that people were not impressed, and it was just that effort level, you know? It's hard when you kind of already have your prospect place assured to find that fire to go out and play, especially if your team is out of the running, which it was kind of a runaway for the Salt River Rafters this year. They were clearly the best team. They had the league MVP in Minnesota's Royce Lewis, who was awesome. So it can be a tough place as far as that goes, but I was pleased to see that our guys, when they were out there, were always giving 100% or more. And I think especially for a guy like Penn, who in a lot of ways this was a coming out party for him. He was a guy who was not on anyone's radar. And, you know, John and I talked to Josh Norris from Baseball America after one of the games, and he was like, who are these pitchers that you guys have?
Yeah,
I get it, though. It can be definitely very hard to fake excitement in some situations. So I kind of, I respect, in a weird way, these people who are channeling sort of a fellow Phoenix legend, Eric Bledsoe, with the I don't want to be here energy. Another reference for maybe a small sliver of people, but your laughter tells me that it works.
I think, Matthew, I think that's an interesting point, though, for it, because it really is like, it's a mixture of people who, you know, are genuinely psyched, especially like the youngest guys there are often like the most energized. Just because it's like, oh my God, like I'm getting to play with all these really well-regarded players, and you know, you're getting, anything you do is almost gravy. Like that was how it was for Julio Rodriguez and for, you know, a number of these guys who have just like, you get a chance to showcase. And then you have the older guys, like the much older guys, who are typically there, you know, because either the team wants to work on something specific or because the team is like trying to get that player onto people's radars.
Yeah, showcasing them for trades.
Exactly. So you have those sort of two groups where you have the like, you know, really motivated groups, and then you may have, you know, it can be sort of hit or miss with the rest of the group of like, sure, I'll treat this the same, or some guys of like, it's October, I've been doing this forever, everyone knows I'm good, like, I know I'm good, they know I'm good, like, why am I here?
That was definitely Luis Garcia, I think, he's just so assured of his position and of his overall prospect ranking that he was like, I got nothing to prove to anyone.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, not the best way to go about your business, but...
Mm-hmm. No. Well, we have a question. This is probably just for Kate. This is... We're going to Twitter, where Verify Satan is currently trending.
So oh.
I see that Mark Canna's offseason is going well.
Oh, touche.
No, we do have a real question from Wayne Teeger. Thank you, Wayne. Wayne asks, did you guys do AFL last year? Kate, you already revealed that you did.
Yes.
Maybe if you could share some of the material differences in the Mariners' talent between years, and what are the KPI? Not sure what that means. The KPI we should care about coming out of the AFL.
I'm not sure I know what KPI is.
We're going to go to the
But
old
I will
Google.
Say that, like...
Key performance indicators.
Good call.
Corporate America strikes again.
Okay, so I will say that the difference between the Mariners prospects this year versus last year is, unfortunately, like, we did not get to... the Mariners have, for the past 2 years, with the Javelinas, enjoyed being league champions, and part of that was Eric Felea helped win the batting won the batting title for the AFL when he was there in 2017, mm-hmm. and you know, in 2018 they were also in 2017 they had, you know, Acuna Jr. 2018 they had, who was the big star in 2018? Maybe 2018 was Acuna. No. Evan White was 2018. I remember that. I'm trying to think. Christian Pache from the Braves, maybe. Maybe it was him. Anyway, they were able to kind of ride the coattails of some other better prospects to victory. This year, the Mariners delegation should have been one of the best. With Julio and Jared, should have been the best organizational 1-2 punch. Unfortunately, as we mentioned earlier, neither of them saw a full season in the AFL, so we were kind of left to rely on Joe Rizzo, who is a taxi squad player, which is basically like taxi squad players are the 7th or 8th players from a team who are sent. They're limited to only playing in 2 games a week, so... Didn't get to see a ton of Joe either, and, you know, taxi squad is a rough assignment to draw. That talent wasn't as good. I will say the pitching talent was a lot better. Sam Delaplane got shut down with triceps tendonitis, I think, and didn't finish out. But he was very good when he was pitching. Aaron Fletcher, who was our... return from the Nationals in the Aaliyah Strickland deal was very good. Obviously, we've sung the praises of Penn Murphy. Ray Kerr still has growing to do, but for an undrafted free agent, like, went out there and performed very solidly for himself as well. So I would say that the big difference this year was, like, we have actual pitching, and Penn told us that players were coming up to him and asking, like, you know, what are the Mariners doing? Like, what are they doing with their pitchers? Because we notice it's a lot of guys, and I throw the same stuff as he does, but he's getting a 40% strikeouts, and I have 20. So, well, basically, like, tell us your secrets, which is a fun and different place to be. But yeah, the Mariners were partnered this year with the Red Sox, the Astros, the Pirates, and the Padres. They always share with the Padres because they share the same complex. And you can really see, like, the Red Sox are the worst farm system in baseball, and it became kind of obvious in seeing who they sent and who, like, their number 9 or number 8 prospects were, who were guys who I wouldn't rank very highly in any other system. Houston, obviously, is always terrifying, but kind of less so beyond Whitley. The Pirates, and even San Diego. I mean, the sun is setting on a lot of these franchises. They're just not pumping out the same level of prospect that they were previously. So that's a little bit... I would honestly say that the Mariners were one of the stronger contributors when they did have guys on the field, one of the better contributors to the Javelinas overall.
Yeah, I was actually, just real quick, going to ask about that, because you guys were actually there, and I'm sure, I mean, it seems like everyone who's there is, like, a quote-unquote baseball person, so I'm wondering...
You don't
like
go to the AFL if you're, like, interested in drinking margaritas by the pool for spring training. No, it is generally, like, big-time baseball people who are there, which is fun. The conversations are fun.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask, is, like, when the Mariners did come up, or, like, when, you know, the comparing of systems conversation happened, like, did you sense a pretty... high level of excitement or even awe, it sounds like, for what the Mariners are doing?
There was not much cheering any time just because such a significant percentage of the folks there are scouting or kind of unaffiliated.
Okay.
But, and I don't know, Kate, you saw, obviously, I think, more non-Javelinas games than I did, but at least in the Javelinas games that we saw, there was, like, if there were fans there, they were, interestingly enough, almost exclusively Mariners fans.
Yeah.
Unless it was, like, a family group of a player. Like, there was a small little contingent that was there typically right behind home plate because the tickets are, you know, free seating, general admission, and it's like $9 or something. It's like super cheap. You can sit anywhere.
They
and
give
can...
away the tickets at Sprouts Farmers Markets. Like,
yes,
there was just a
yes.
huge stack of unused tickets
yes,
that I saw.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Rick Riz was there just hanging out watching games because he missed baseball and wanted to watch some more baseball. So like,
which was really cute. Can we sidebar and tell the Jonathan Class A story?
Yes, feel free.
So one of the things that is going to come out over the next couple of weeks is we have an interview with Jonathan Class A, who we've gotten some questions about on the site. He is he's kind of a pop-up performer, I think. He's listed at like 5'8", 150, but he put up some of the strongest numbers behind Noel V. Marte, who obviously has a lot more prospect shine attached to him in the DSL. So he was there for the high performance camp, and we were able to like kind of get some time with him and talk to him, and he actually... because all these guys are looking at Julio, and that's another story we can tell, is about the relationship between the guys who are there from the DSL and how they look at Julio. But he's trying to follow in Julio's footsteps, so he shows up at all the AFL games to watch and, you know, just kind of educate himself. And Rick Riz was there, and Riz introduced himself to Class A, like, took his name down, wrote it down so he was sure he would get it right. And this is a kid with, like, some pretty limited English. He's definitely, he tries really hard, and he's great. But, you know, he was, like, explaining himself to Rick Riz, and Riz was, like, so patient and kind with him. And when he left, he was, like, we explained to him who he was and, like, what role he plays in Seattle. And as he left, Riz said to Jonathan, like, you know, good luck, young man, you have a bright future ahead, and I will see you when you make the big leagues. And his smile was just, it was such a meaningful moment for him. It was so sweet, and, like, no one asked Rick Riz to do that. There was no, like, PR or anything. Like, he is just a genuinely good person.
Well, that's very exciting to hear. How old is Class A?
17.
And what position does he play?
Center field.
Okay, thank you.
You can find more information about Class A on, I believe, the Lookout Landing Twitter account, where he absolutely just roasted me in a race that I did challenge him to.
Yeah, this was John's idea. I want to be real clear about that. I
was trying to live the do it for the vine lifestyle.
Do it for the gram.
Yeah, I did it for all these things, and I did it bad.
It wasn't that bad. It's just Class A is said to have 70 grade
fast.
Speed. Some yeah. evaluators have said he's the fastest kid on the island. So it's really easy speed. And
that 17-year-old energy is so hard to match.
It's true.
To his credit, when he realized that he had outpaced John and was going to, he like kind of shut it down a little bit. He worked just hard enough to get several steps ahead of John, to whom we gave a sizable head start, and then he kind of didn't humiliate him as badly as he could have, honestly.
That's good. He respects the race.
He does. He's a very respectful kid. Very sweet. But yeah, there were a lot of like hardcore Mariner fans there who I think are like maybe kind of the snowbird types, like
yeah.
have a condo or something down there, have friends with a condo and just go back and forth. So if you want to meet some Mariner fans, go to the Peoria Sports Complex during the AFL. There will be like a little crew. They all have their Mariners gear on, and you can make friends pretty easily.
Beautiful. Okay, what can you tell us about Noel V. Marte? What was the main takeaway from interacting with him and watching him play against other pretty skilled competition?
He wasn't there to play. He was there for the high-performance camp. So okay. We didn't actually get to see him in action, but I did get to talk to him. That's another interview that is forthcoming. I learned he's a 17-year-old landlord. So that was
that's true.
That's what he did with his signing bonus. He bought his mom a house, and then he bought a bunch of like little parcels of land in the Dominican, and he's a teenage landlord.
Wow,
I'm thinking about myself at 17, and you know, not so much. I will say, like, Noel V does not come off as having a huge personality, mostly because he's very Spanish dominant. He does not really enjoy speaking English or trying in that manner. He's a little shy about it. But his personality is, he's sort of like a strong, he's still definitely a leader. Like, he's more of a quiet leader, but he does have a big personality that he shows once he feels comfortable. And he's very thoughtful. He gave very thoughtful and I thought really interesting answers to the questions that I asked him. Again, like, all these guys are looking at Julio and they're all thinking about like how they're going to kind of follow in his career footsteps. And Noel V said one of the most important things Julio did for him was to tell him that you're going to get judged differently as a Latin guy. And so you have to be follow the American guys, like, do what they do. Go when they go to a meeting, go to the meeting at the same time, like, be early, because it's easy to get judged as lazy if you are a Latin guy, and just to always kind of be showing that hustle, which I thought was a really interesting, I don't love that Julio felt that he needed to convey that, but I thought it was a really key bit of, like, cultural competency or cross-cultural communication that Julio was instilling in the guys. So I found that interesting.
That is actually, I think, very fascinating, that because Julio hasn't even gotten to the highest level of, you know, pro ball yet, and he already kind of has that thing of like, I need to, like, I'm not, you know, not the whole like he's the spokesman for all Latin players, but he has that burden of sort of understanding, like, if he does, you know, show up late to a meeting accidentally, that can reflect in a whole different way than if he was from Kentucky or whatever. So I think that is, I mean, knowing that Julio is sort of like the prospect that all the other prospects are going to already, even some of the ones who I'm sure are older than him, is, that's something that I think is very encouraging for Mariners fans who have been looking for like something within the prospect system that's not just raw numbers. You know what I mean? Like, there's the human element of his game and his mind that has come out a little bit now that you get to see him in person.
Yeah, John actually talked to Arturo Guerrero, who's another, there's kind of like a little group, they all live with him, Arturo, Clase, Marte, and they all call him Papa Julio, and he calls them his sons.
Arturo is older. Chronologically older than Julio, but yeah, sure, why not?
Oh, they all recognize like that he has achieved things that they want to achieve, and that they are, that like the closer they kind of stick to his example, the better shot they have of achieving what he's achieved. So I think it's really important to know that Julio, what he does on the field is kind of, that's just part of it. Like, what he does off the field and the effect he has in the organization and the way that he can be that, you know, just somebody who affects this positive change among all his fellow prospects. Like, you know, you see him relate very easily to the American-born guys. They all love him. Obviously, the Latin guys really look up to him. And, you know, I think that his importance to the team goes way beyond the field.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I think that point, it's one that's easy to sort of hand wave in a sense, because, like, yeah, of course you, you know, look up to your teammate who has had success, but it really is, like, you know, especially for the Mariners, who have had such a long time since having, you know, really homegrown stars come through their system, there, it's, you know, it's ultimately, or it's almost a blank slate in terms of role models to look to who were in this exact circumstance. And the fact that, you know, Julio has obviously this immense level of expectations as his own player, but also that he is viewed by his own teammates and by the rest of the prospects following him as, this is the example, this is who we want to play like and be like, is an, it's a wonderful thing, because, you know, Julio is, if it's going to be someone, you would want it to be someone like Julio, who is, you know, very precocious and smart and obviously talented enough that most people, you know, across the country and across all of baseball agree, yes, this person is going to be a good Major League Baseball player. But also, like, that's so scary to be, you know, to have, I mean, really, to, like, you know, to be an 18-year-old who, not only are you counting on yourself, your family is counting on yourself to be extraordinary, but you're, you know, so much of the rest of the organization is counting on him, including his closest friends. I mean, it, and they are looking at him as, okay, we're going to do what you do. We're going to do as you do. You have to be right. Like, that was something that really stuck with me from talking with these players and talking with the coaching staff and whatnot, is that's an unbelievable level of expectation to have on yourself when you are 18. When I would crumble like a leaf in the breeze. I mean, just, it is staggering. It is it's so hard to put yourself in those shoes in that way.
And yet at the same time, like, when you hear Julio say, like, I want to break baseball. Like, I want to be the person that they're I want to be the next face of baseball. I want to be the person that people think of when they think of baseball. I mean, he wants to be kind of what Mike Trout is now. I mean, that is nothing short of his goal, I think, is to be the face of baseball. And when you have those kinds of expectations of yourself, or when you have those dreams, you have to kind of, it's not empty for him. Like, he puts the work behind it. So if whatever it takes, and if part of that is, it takes lifting everyone. I think that that's what's kind of special about Julio, is as big as his dreams are for himself, like, he is not a selfish person. He is extremely others focused. He is always like, you know, even last year when I was talking to him and he was like, but what about, you know, what about my friend Noelvi? Like, you should talk to Noelvi, or you should talk to, talk to my friend Daniel. Like, he's very understanding of the fact that everyone needs their own time to shine.
It is, yeah. And you know, for him, on his level, the people he's looking at are Juan Soto. You know, he looks at Juan Soto and says, I want that, you know, right? And that's the sort of thing he has to do, is look at, okay, who are the current people no one can explain.
Who are the standard bearers right now? Who's the face of baseball right now? And yeah, as much as he's trying to bring people along behind him, he's definitely hewing to those paths. And
it's a fun thing to root for, and to hopefully see develop, because there is just now a ton interconnected. Intentionally interconnected because of all of this.
I feel like a lot of Mariners fans are really burned out on prospects, right? Like, it's been so long since we had a really good homegrown one. I definitely understand people who doubt the system and doubt the Mariners' ability to produce someone and are hesitant in believing in Julio. or Jared or Logan Gilbert or any of them. In fact, one of the things I wanted to say was I was sitting at a game in front of somebody who was in charge of scouting the Mariners. I don't know if he was a Mariner scout or not. He seemed to know the AL West pretty well, so maybe he was just an AL West scout. I have no idea. But he was talking about the Mariners system, and he was like, Kelenic is someone, Rodriguez is someone, Gilbert is a back-end rotation. Gilbert's a back-end guy in the rotation, and then they don't have anything else. And I was like, Evan White, like, Kyle Lewis, Jake Fritz, like, none of these are guys that you think are anyone. So I think there is still, even industry-wide, that perception that the system is poor or whatever. But I would buy big on Julio. I think that even if you're wrong, like, and even if it doesn't all work out as we really hope it will, he's so fun. He's so easy to root for. He's just a genuinely good person. And, you know, you just want I want success for him very badly. So get in on the Julio train.
Plus, it's just way more fun to be rooting for good things to happen than having the whole, like, I'm so guarded against bad things happening that I can't allow myself to even consider the option of, you know, just enjoying things. Like, it's a weird place the Mariners have put us in where we feel like happiness has to come with a caveat. So I hope that this can be the start of that shift.
I think, too, with, like, the big league team looking like it's going to look for 2020, like, you were just... I suggest either getting invested in the prospects or just tuning out on the team for a year or so. I honestly think that there's nothing to be gained by just being negative and worried. If that is really, like, your mindset, I understand that. I totally understand that the team has done nothing to over the past decade plus to cause any different feelings. But I think you don't have to be engaged. Like, there are so many other things to engage in. Pick one of them. Like, I often wish that I was not so tied to the Mariners in the beautiful Seattle weather and could go out and do more things. So, I think get on board with the prospects or buckle down for some pretty ugly baseball in 2020.
Yeah. All right, you two. Well, we would be remiss if we didn't get your takes on the non-baseball parts of the Fall League. Kate, you are a veteran of the Fall League now, having done it multiple times. John, this was your first time, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, John, I'm interested in hearing, because I've been talking about the Fall League forever. Like, I'm interested in hearing what you thought of it, specifically our Airbnb and our wonderful host, Scott.
Yeah, we can put also, Scott.
Real quick, apparently Sprouts Market was a big part of your experience. On Twitter, we had someone asking about when
Brittany.
Will Sprouts... It was Brittany Bush-Belay, yeah, asking when will we get a Sprouts and why is it not soon enough.
Ugh.
I'm familiar with Scouts Sprouts, sorry, not Scouts. Familiar with Sprouts from my time in San Diego, so I would love to join in on the praise for it. But let's get John's opinion on the Arizona Fall League as a rookie being down there for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, it was dope. Like, obviously, I'm thoroughly into the minutia baseball component, but, like, even if you're just going with baseball as, like, an excuse sort of binding activity, like, it's cheap. There's usually two games you can go to each day, especially, like, later in, like, October.
Yeah.
'Cause usually there's, like, one or two 12:30 games, and then there's a 6:30 game. All the games are, like, within 45 minutes to an hour of each other, and you can kind of just spend the rest of the time eating really good tacos and margaritas, and, like, yeah, I mean, it is, you'll kind of, we did it right, like, we did a lot of go to the grocery store, acquire things that you'll want to, like, hole up at the house with, because you don't want to, like, everything in Arizona is just far from other
things. Yeah, you spend a lot of time in the car, and that is a drawback of the Fall League, is like, you definitely need a car unless you are staying, like, literally at that P83 complex across the street.
The walkability is non-existent, and, like, if you're gonna take, like, ride sharing, unfortunately, like, because of how spread out everything is, like, you'd run up some tabs. So but like everything else is pretty cheap. So you know, like you can get some cool places to stay. You can just hang out at a pool and watch baseball. And I could not recommend it highly enough. I'm very glad I did go. And like you get to see like all sorts of people that you will recognize. You'll be like, oh, like that's, you know, an executive from whatever team, you know, like, oh, that's, you know.
Oh yeah, we definitely saw Bill Bevasi, who took over took over the AFL, and John was too chicken to go talk to him, which I will never let him live down.
It was at the end of the game. I reached out to the office afterwards. I got information from him, so there we go.
Beautiful. And Sprouts, you guys are both in on Sprouts.
Yeah, I got to take John to Sprouts for the first time, which was pretty exciting. Ever since Tiffany, friend of the site, Tiffany, brought me to my first Sprouts, or maybe it was just the person who told me about Sprouts, but Sprouts is kind of like a step below Whole Foods, but a step above a Trader Joe's, and it is... They have tons of bulk food, so, like, you can just go to the bulk bins and stock up on stuff. I always bring my mom this trail mix that is, like, her favorite. It's, like, peanuts and chocolate bits and chocolate-covered peanut butter cups, and it is wonderful. It's really not healthy, but it's delicious. It's sort of a health food store, so you can convince yourself anything you're buying there is healthy.
Yeah, they got a bunch of pre-mixed strawberry margaritas that we tried on various different levels, which were great as well. Those were not really the health mix, but sorry, carry on with the health.
No, I mean, it's just a good place to get, like we were saying, like your basic snack level stuff for eating kind of at the Airbnb. Definitely splurge and make sure that you splurge. I mean, I think our place was like $60. And split among all of us was not that bad at all. And it was huge and nice, and there was a pool. And I mean, your money just goes so much further than it does during spring training. And like, no, you're not exactly seeing the same level of baseball, but
and the atmosphere at the games
and the atmosphere very at the games is very dead different. For sure. Although, like, if you're into prospects and you want to, like, meet some people, and especially if you have kids, because there are a ton of, like, professional autograph people, but the players love seeing actual kids there. So it would be a great way to, like, let your kids interact with some ball players, especially if you live kind of far away from any of the various affiliates.
That's great news, hearing that the Arizona Fall League is delightful. I have even better news for our listeners north of Seattle. There is a Sprouts Farmers Market in both Mill Creek and Linwood, so you have options if you're trying to get in on this.
I want to say that I looked it up, and I'm not sure that that's the same one.
Really? Specialty chain offering a range of natural and organic grocery items?
Oh, maybe it is then.
We're going to hit the website, folks. Stick around.
Anyway, yay Sprouts.
For an extra time.
Mill Creek.
Pro Sprouts, there's a great taco place. There's one, like, walkable from the complex, and then there's one that's, like, 5 minutes down the road that's much delicious called Tacos Calafia. Extremely cheap, extremely delicious. You can have a real good old time.
Glorious. Well, this was a great old time. Thank you to Kate Prusser and John Troopin, who I assume will be back to tip-top shape in no time. You powered through to give us content, and we're forever grateful for that.
You know me.
Of course. The podcast will power on through the off-season with more conversations about why we're Mariners fans, but for now, we needed to get some actual news. Keep your eye on the site for actual articles and interviews of some of the prospects we mentioned. And, in no time, we'll have the sort of more shiny version of the Arizona Fall League spring training, which is coming quicker than we realize. So thank you for listening. Thanks, Kate and John, for joining me. Any final words before we get out of here?
Thanks, Matthew, for hosting.
Of course.
Have we convinced you to have we swayed your interest in attending the
party? Yeah, because you were kind of like up in the air about it this year. So
absolutely. Well, I'm going to pull back the curtain on my personal life. Today is the 28th. On the 31st, I'm going to New Orleans, and I just couldn't figure out a way to financially do two vacations that close to each other.
Yeah. So.
That's fair.
Next year, I will clear the entire month of October and go to Arizona and fight off scorpions with you two.
Yay!
All right.
Beautiful. All right, until next time. Bye.
Bye.
No. More.